From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde. Why do people love animals that they consider cute, like puppies and panda bears, but don't have a lot of time for animals that they consider ugly, like naked mole rats? Hal Herzog explores the paradoxical relationship that people have with animals in his new book. It's called Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat: Why It's So Hard to Think Straight About Animals. Hal Herzog is a psychology professor at Western Carolina University, and he joins us now. Hal Herzog, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be on the show today.
So one of the things that inspired you to write this book is a dispute that you had with an animal rights activist at your university who had heard a nasty rumor about you. What happened?
Yeah, the rumor was that I was getting kittens at the local animal shelter and feeding them to my son's boa constrictor.
Any truth to that? Are you a known cat hater?
No. Number one, there's no known truth to that. And number two, I actually have a pet cat, and I would never feed a kitten to a boa constrictor. But it did get me thinking about some big issues. And one of the big issues was, well, given there's about 2 million dead cats each year that are killed in animal shelters, what would be wrong with actually feeding their now dead carcasses to boa constrictors? And that got me thinking about a lot of issues associated with the paradoxes of why we use animals the way we do.
So what are some of the ethical questions that it raised for you about cats and boa constrictors?
Well, one of the ethical issues that it raised for me as a person who owns a cat is that my cat is essentially a serial killer. And she loves to go out and kill small things. And what I found out was the person who accused me of feeding kittens to boa constrictors, she had quite a few cats that were also serial killers. And what I realized, even though she was a vegetarian and a vegan and an animal activist, she was bearing the moral burden of her cat's diet. And then I did the math, and I estimated that the number of small animals killed by the cats of animal rights activists actually outnumbered all the animals used in animal research every year in the United States.
And you ask whether or not it would be ethical to feed cats to boa constrictors. What's the answer to that question?
The answer for me is no, it's not ethical to feed them to them. At the time, we were feeding mice, dead mice, to my son's snake. And so what's really the difference between a cat and a mouse? If they're both going to wind up in the gullet of a snake, what it basically boiled down to is what I considered the at least partly irrational fact that they're in different categories. Mice are in the pest category, and cats are in the category of the animals that we love. And that's what sort of got me thinking about this issue. And so, you know, why do we love some animals, hate some, and then eat some?
Hal Herzog is a psychology professor at Western Carolina University, and his book is Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat. It's about the complicated relationships that humans have with animals. And you write about the fact that humans' love for animals in this book does not often extend to snakes. What did you find out about snakes in your research for the book?
Well, one of the things that interests me about snakes is that I have always been one of the few people that really like snakes. I have always found them fascinating. When I was in high school, I collected them. I've done research on snake behavior, and I find them absolutely gorgeous. But the fact is that most people are afraid of them. They're the animal most likely to have phobias of, and the question is why? Is this instinctive? Is it something we learned? Is it because some of them are dangerous, or is it because that they're just so weird without having any legs?
And what did you find out? What's the answer to some of those questions?
Well, the simple answer, what a lot of people would like to believe and what I used to believe, was that we had an instinctive aversion to snakes. And I'm now sort of rethinking that because of some new research, which is showing that if you show pictures of snakes to infants, they are attracted to them and they actually see them very easily. They can pick them out in a picture easier than they can pick out other things. However, they're not afraid of them, but if they hear an adult scream while they're looking at the picture of a snake, they will acquire an aversion to snakes pretty quickly.
So this is a culturally transmitted sense of horror in the face of snakes?
My guess is that as is often the case, it's both cultural and biological factors. And then there's also this cognitive factor that I'm really interested in now, which is the fact that they are so weird. They're sort of like space aliens. I mean, our fear of spiders is in some way equally irrational. Very few people die of spider bites, but the fact that they're relatively large and they have eight legs and they look hairy and weird, I suspect that's part of the reason why people are afraid of them.
Hal Herzog is with us. He's a psychology professor at Western Carolina University who writes about humans' relationships with animals, sometimes complicated, sometimes paradoxical relationships that people have. And recently on this program, we talked to a University of Washington scientist who studies marine microbes who are actually responsible for every other breath you take. They produce half the oxygen on the planet, and yet you don't read about them very much. You read about sea otters and seals. People seem to prefer cute animals to animals that aren't as cute, even if those animals might be more important. Why do people prefer cute animals?
We are hardwired. There's increasing evidence that we are hardwired to look at a dog or a cat with a kitten, let's say a puppy or kitten with great big eyes. And what we see is something that reminds us in our deep subconscious of a human infant. And so what mediates our love for our attraction to the cute is the love for our children, our genetically encoded desire to be nice to babies, human babies.
So we're hardwired actually to click onto those videos of cute animals on the internet?
It amazes me the number of cute animals on the internet. There's whole websites devoted to that. One of my favorite books in the last couple of years, it was Cute Animals in Casts. And you can imagine, there's nothing cuter than a cute kitten, except a cute kitten with a cast on its leg.
Hal Herzog is a psychology professor at Western Carolina University, and the book is Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat, about humans' relationships with animals. So Hal Herzog, you mentioned that you're a pet owner. What pets do you have?
We have one cat.
And you write about sort of the definition of a pet and how it differs from other animals. What's the definition of a pet?
Well, I like my friend James Serple's definition. And what James argues is that a pet is an animal that we keep in our homes that has no obvious function.
Would that include like hunting dogs? I mean, there's some pet owners would maybe, you know, take issue with that and say, my dog retrieves ducks or what have you.
Well, it's interesting. In Western North Carolina, where I live, I know hunters and I hang out with them sometime. And what my pals that are, let's say, coon hunters do is that they'll actually sometimes have two categories of dogs in their life. They'll have their hound dogs, which live outside, and a lot of people don't like it, but they're oftentimes kept chained for most of the year, and they're treated like, you know, hunting dogs. But they're never allowed in the house. They have names, but they don't play with them or pet them. But then on the other hand, quite often they'll have a house pet that lives in the house, and it may be a smaller animal, and it may eat at the kitchen table, and they treat it just like you probably treat your dog. It's a companion and a friend. So even the dogs in our lives can have two very different categories and very different treatments depending on the categories we put them in.
My dog, Golden Retriever, now deceased, although we recently had a praying mantis for my 5-year-old son, which sounds like, according to this book, is an unusual pet.
They have big eyes.
Yeah. That's a good point. They do look like space aliens, too.
But if they do,
if pets are not useful, why do we have them?
That is a great question. And number one, some of my colleagues like to believe that that's because we have an instinct for biophilia, to love all things bright and beautiful. And I dispute that. And I dispute it for a couple of reasons. Number one is that a lot of cultures don't have pets at all. Some cultures don't have even the word for pet. So pets are very individualistic when it comes to different cultures. Even in our culture, we've seen a different treatment of pets now than we did even 20 or 30 years ago with this idea of the humanization of pets. The other thing is that a lot of people say, well, we have pets because they give us unconditional love. Well, I used to believe that when I had dogs, like a Golden Retriever, which I had, and they did give us unconditional love. But now I have a cat. My serial killer of a cat, Tilly, and she does not give me unconditional love. It's a one-way street oftentimes.
You mentioned biology earlier. Is there something hardwired and biological about our connection to just wanting to be around animals, do you think?
I think it's not, first of all, not everybody wants to be around animals. Mm-hmm. And actually, the thing that's one of the things that interests me is we don't know very much about that group of people. The new field of the study of human-animal interactions is called anthrozoology, and it's mostly focused on people that are animal lovers. But when I ask my students, I'll say, okay, class, how many of you, is there somebody in your household that doesn't like the family pet or is afraid of the family pet? Usually about a third of the hands go up. So not everybody is an animal, mm-hmm. animal lover.
Do pets make people happy on average or not?
That's a very good question. You ask it a very good way. I would say on average they do. But I think my personal view, and I've done some research on this, is that the psychological and health benefits of pets have been overplayed by the media, and particularly by the pet food companies and the pet products industry.
So what's an example of that?
Well, the example is that all the news media stories you read that, for example, pet owners survive heart attacks at higher rates than non-pet owners. And there are studies that have found that. I know people that are good researchers that have found that. But there's also studies that have shown just the opposite, that pet owners actually are less likely to survive from heart attacks. But the problem is that that research doesn't get the same media attention as do the feel-good stories. People really like feel-good animal stories.
Psychology professor Hal Herzog's book is Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat, about people's relationships with animals. And some of the people that you interviewed for the book say that they actually think pet ownership itself is immoral. What's the case for that point of view?
Yeah, the argument there is that basically that pet ownership is analogous to slavery. That we keep these animals for our benefit, we control what they do. There's some types of manipulations we do to them that we think are unethical. For example, docking their tails, or changing the shape of their ears, or doing surgery on them. But on the other hand, there's some types of surgery we do on them that we think is morally good. For example, cutting their genitals off because we don't like them to breed. So the argument, furthermore, we think of pets as companions and friends, but yet we have the right to sell them and buy them. And furthermore, if you tire of your pet, you have the legal right to take it to a veterinarian and have it killed.
What do you think?
I love my cat. I think it's one of these paradoxes that I think that's what makes us human. Some people have asked me about my book. They read my book and they said, Dr. Herzog, your book's not really about animals, is it? And I said, you're absolutely right. What it's really about is about human foibles, the best and the worst in human nature, as it plays out in this realm of our interactions with other species.
The Theater of Human Pet Relations. By Hal Herzog. The book is Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat. And you talk about the fact that in some places eating animals like dogs is not done. In other places, it's perfectly fine. What did you find about the difference?
Well, the difference is in those cultures. For example, in Southeast Asia is a place where it's fine, has been historically fine to eat dogs, but also in parts of North America, the Aztecs bred dogs for eating. The interesting thing is that you see these paradoxes play out. So, for example, in Korea, where dog eating is still quite common, pet keeping is becoming increasingly common, including keeping dogs for pets. So in that culture, what you see is some dogs bred for the pet industry and some dogs bred for the meat industry, and this is causing some conflicts in that culture.
Why don't people typically eat animals like dogs that they consider pets?
Well, I think because we think of them as our companions and we treat them increasingly like humans. So eating your dog is sort of akin to cannibalism.
Would you consider eating your cat if you were hungry enough?
No.
Do you think your cat would consider eating you?
Yes. If she were big, yes.
Hal Herzog is a psychology professor who studies the relationships that humans have with animals, and his book's called Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat. Hal Herzog, a lot of this book is about you, and I'm also wondering kind of where you fall on the animal rights spectrum.
That's a good question. I take a total coward's way out, and I write in the beginning of the book that I fall in the gray area that I call the troubled middle.
The troubled middle where most people probably fall.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. That the thing that I have in common is that most people are ambivalent about the treatment of animals. So, for example, I support animal research. I think that animal research has led to medical breakthroughs, and I think we need that for continued medical breakthroughs. On the other hand, I opposed the use of animals, for example, for the testing of new types of eye makeup or mascara, something like that. I would support the use of animals for the treatment of something like, not support the use of animals for something like baldness, treatment of baldness, but I would for, let's say, coming up with a cure for cancer.
What about
like many people, I'm ambivalent about a lot of these issues.
What about eating meat?
I eat meat, and I don't feel guilty about eating meat. What I have done is I have tried increasingly, I'm aware of the problems with eating meat. And in fact, I find that eating meat, it's impossible for me to morally justify. I don't even try it. Eating meat is problematic, for moral reasons, ecological reasons, and for health reasons. However, it tastes really, 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 really good, at least to me. And so what I do is I try and eat meat that's humanely raised. I eat less of it than I used to. So I'm doing small things that I can.
You also mentioned sort of degrees of adventurousness when it comes to meat eating. What's the dividing line for you?
Well, it's interesting. As I was writing my chapter on meat, I made a list of things I would not eat and things that I would eat. So for me, for things that I would not eat, on the discuss line, there's a thing that eaten in the Philippines called balut, which is semi-rotten duckling eggs, you know, fledged duckling eggs that you eat raw. On the other hand, I had jellyfish on the list of things that I would not eat. And then I was at a Chinese restaurant in Boston, and they had jellyfish on the menu. And I thought long and hard and thought, you know, I'm going to do this. And so I did. I ate a jellyfish. So my own meat eating, you know, has changed, just like a lot of people have. In the United States, you know, when I was a kid, the idea of eating raw fish would have just been awful. And now sushi is one of the most popular things in America.
But what are the issues there when it comes to kind of why some meats are taboo and others aren't? I mean, I think it's kind of related to this question about whether or not people eat dogs, for example. Does every culture essentially have these points of where they're not going to eat certain kinds of meat?
Yes, just about. And furthermore, meats are the most frequently tabooed foods. Meats are much more likely to be tabooed than vegetables or fruits. And virtually every culture has them. The thing that's interesting to me is that oftentimes meat taboos don't make a lick of sense. And you can see this, for example, in the biblical rules against eating different types of meat. So it's okay to eat, let's say, it's not okay to eat a shrimp, but it's okay to eat a fish. Let's say. So there's lots of rules like that. And you see this in every culture where there's just an almost arbitrary set of rules. And these things can change. I talk in my book about a case of basically yak being tabooed in Nepalese culture. And this anthropologist that was studying that went back 10 years later and found out everybody was chowing down on it. And they had changed. It had been tabooed for centuries. And all of a sudden that they made a very rapid change in that taboo.
You also bring up an example set here in Seattle at the Pike Place Market where people are throwing fish around, which you see as a kind of a contradictory perspective on animal corpses. What are you getting at there?
Yeah, what I was getting at there is I've actually been to Pike Market. I love Seattle, and I always go to Pike Market when I'm in town. And, you know, they have the guys throwing the big salmon around. And the American Veterinary Medical Association met there a number of years ago, and they had a demonstration of fish corpse tossing. And PETA got all upset about that. And then she said, you know, they wouldn't be laughing at this if it was the corpses of kittens that they were throwing around. And I realized, you know, she was absolutely right. And so to me, this was a really good example of these paradoxes that we have. We draw these sort of arbitrary moral lines. You know, salmon is a stunningly beautiful animal.
Hal Herzog is a psychology professor at Western Carolina University and an expert on humans' relationships with animals. A final question here. Where this field of study of relationships between humans and animals is headed, if you can kind of summarize sort of where it is and where you think it's going.
Yeah, that's a great point. First of all, it's a very interdisciplinary field, and it's a new field that really goes back about 20 years. And it attracts researchers from a lot of different areas. And basically, it basically has not had the funding until recently, but the National Science Foundation is now funding research in this area, especially on the impact of pets on people and especially children. And there's some really terrific researchers getting involved in it, and as is the pet industry. And the pet industry is starting to put up money for research in the field.
Hal Herzog, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Hal Herzog is a psychology professor at Western Carolina University, and his book is Some We Love, Some We Hate, Some We Eat. From KUOW, 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.